Welcome to At the Organ.
I'm Jim Logue, and welcome to At the Organ. Today my guest is organist Jonathan Ryan, who is joining me by phone from Greenwich, Connecticut. There was a little bit of noise on the line during the interview, just to let you know.
My name is Jonathan Ryan, and I am the Associate Director of Music at Christ Church in Greenwich, Connecticut, a large Episcopal church here.
Jonathan's current album, Influences, is being considered for a Grammy nomination. Right now, his album is among a list of albums being considered for Classical Album of the Year. Of that list, five will be chosen as the nominations, which will be announced December 6th. Then the Grammy Awards will be presented February 12, 2017. Before we talk about the albums, I asked Jonathan to tell us about himself.
I'm the oldest of three sons, and my mother is a pianist. So I grew up hearing music, and in particular seeing her teach piano. I kind of dabbled at piano a bit, but it was when I was 8 years old that I was really struck by music, and in particular the organ. I grew up just outside of Charlotte, North Carolina, and when I was 8 years old, Calvary Church was just opening their new building. Huge, huge complex. The sanctuary has 2.5 million cubic feet of airspace, so it's an enormous room. And it was the talk of the town. We, you know, all were hearing about it. And so we went there one Sunday night, more out of curiosity, I think, than anything, just to see what it was like. And they were in the middle of installing the organ there. That organ there, a 1990 Moeller organ, is still to this day, I believe, the largest organ ever built at one time, completely from scratch. So meaning not previous instruments that's been enlarged over the years and so forth, but it's all completely brand new at one time. And so I could see inside the organ case, see the different divisions, all the different kinds of pipes. Some of the facade was up, and of course the huge console was also there, but it was not being used yet. They were still using a temporary electronic organ, which I believe was a Rogers. And the draw knobs on the side of the console lit up when they were on. And so we were in one of the balconies, and there in that balcony was 8-year-old me, who could not keep his eyes off of this organ console with all these lights that kept, you know, changing and different sounds happening and so forth. It was really a very, very captivating thing for me at that age. I think just, you know, stuck in my mind. They announced at that service that the dedication concert would be happening, you know, later on that year, and we went to that. But it really wasn't until the next concert at Calvary Church that I have a very clear memory of thinking, okay, I have to be an organist, this is me. In fact, that concert was Diane Bish, who did one of her Joy of Music programs there as part of the concert. And we wound up sitting on the front row. In fact, to this day, you can still see on that program, at the end of the last piece, the very first person to stand up in a yellow dress on the front row was my mom. And right beside her is 8-year-old me, who just realized I have to be an organist. And then, you know, being able to watch her program on TV was a fantastic follow-up. So that's what first got me interested in the organ. I later taught myself to play the organ when we got an organ in my home for my 9th birthday, which is actually still in my parents' home. And I began piano lessons and then organ lessons, and was very serious about it, was fortunate to have parents who supported my musical interests. And here we are. I did my undergrad degree with Todd Wilson at the Cleveland Institute of Music. And I did my master's degree at the Eastman School of Music, where I studied organ with David Hicks. I graduated from the Cleveland Institute of Music in 2004, and then Eastman in 2006. Right out of Eastman, I went to Chicago, and I was in Chicago for 6 really wonderful years. I was first at St. John Cantius Church for 4 years, part of a huge music program in a very large Roman Catholic parish, where even to this day they still do lots of masses with orchestra within the liturgical setting, Mozart and Haydn and Schubert, lots of, you know, Renaissance choral masses, Gregorian chant, and you know, so forth. It's a bit of an unusual program, but it was a very musically and liturgically rich time for me. Very fond memories. And then I moved into 2 years, actually, of mainly freelancing in Chicago. I had a few other things that I did around town. For example, I was the visiting artist at St. James Cathedral for 2 years, where I would be involved, among other things, in their concert series. For example, I did a solo organ transcription accompaniment of the Brahms Requiem for a concert there, and we did that live on radio with the St. James Cathedral Choir conducted by Bruce Barber. That was a lot of fun. And then I moved east to the New York City area, where I still am, in 2012. And I also, in addition to the church work, which I love very much, and especially the conducting and working with choirs. I'm actually very passionate about conducting in choirs. I really could never be without that. I also am able to travel around to do concerts and so forth, which I also love, and I also have some private students as well that I teach. So I really enjoy the combination of traveling for concerts and doing church work and conducting in choirs and also teaching.
Your first album was called A Cathedral's Voice. How did that album come about?
Ultimately, it was just something inside of me that said, okay, I think that we are ready to do this. It was also that I was beginning to enter a new decade of my life, and I thought, well, this is, I think, a time in my life when I'm, ready to begin doing this. It is a little bit of a horrifying venture in that you think, okay, this recording is going to be around forever. And, what will I be happy with it in 20 years or in 40 years? And people around the world will be hearing this and associating this with me and as an example of my playing. But I thought, this is something that I need to do. I felt that I was about as ready for it as anybody, really can be. And when I was looking for opportunities to make such a recording happen, that, exactly wound up happening, a Cathedral's Voice on a new instrument by Parkey Organ Builders, who are just outside of Atlanta, at the Cathedral of St. John Birchman's in Shreveport, opened up. And having been familiar with that instrument already from having played a concert there and also served as a judge at an organ competition that was based there shortly thereafter, I was already familiar with the instrument and what it could do. And I knew that for my first recording, I wanted to do quite a variety of music. And I knew that organ would be able to handle such a program. And the door opened up and I said, okay, let's do this.
And your current album is called Influences. Tell us about that project.
I wanted to record the large Dupré work on that recording, which is the Symphonie Passion, or the Passion Symphony. That's a work that I've played in recital for, I would say over a decade now. And the piece itself has an unusual origin in that it was originally an improvisation on a completely unique instrument, the Watermaker organ in Philadelphia. Dupré did that on his 1921 tour. So the piece has some unusual and unique demands placed on the organ because it was originally improvised at Watermaker's. Even in the published score, there are indications for registration, for sounds that the composer wants the organist to use that really don't exist on any kind of French instrument, like Dupré would have had in France. Yet, there is still very much a French core at the work. So, it's this tricky combination of French and American. And this Dupré work, the Passion Symphony, has been recorded any number of times on many different instruments, including by Dupré himself, and also on the Wanamaker organ and a number of other instruments as well. I wanted to bring out what I heard as a commingling of the French influence, French symphonic influence, with the American orchestral kind of influence, which is a very, very tricky thing to do. And that's partly simply because of the history of the piece, but it's also for musical reasons as well. For example, at the end of the last movement, called Resurrection, it concludes with a very brilliant toccata. And there, I want the organ to have that brilliance that the French instruments can have, that exciting, almost overwhelming blaze that large clavicle instruments, for example, like Dupré knew, are able to convey. Especially American orchestral organs don't really offer that particular kind of sound. And I think that musically, that work really needs it, because there's a lot of really heavy writing, very, very serious things. I mean, the third movement is about the crucifixion of Jesus. And I think that just from a musical standpoint, we need that big occasion of exaltation and elation. But there are also, again, many times, for example, in the Nativity movement, when we need sounds that the French organs are not going to have. So I searched for at least 5 years that I can pinpoint for an organ, if it even existed, that can bring out both sides of this work. And I eventually came to the organ that I made this recording on, just outside of Luxembourg City in Dudelange, an organ that is originally from 1912 by Georg Staluth, that in its first incarnation had elements of three different national styles, a late Romantic German style. It also had a number of French style stops. And thirdly, it also had a big English style high pressure tuba. And then when the organ was rebuilt in 2002 by Jan, they intentionally took that concept, which was original to the 1912 instrument, and tried to expound upon it. And I think they did so in a brilliant way. So you have an instrument that is nearly fully French symphonic, but also fully, you know, German romantic, with, again, you know, this high-pressure English tuba as well. And I visited that organ twice before I decided to make this recording on it, because I really wanted to make sure that it was the right one that can bring out all that I was talking about. And I said, this is it. This is absolutely it. It has, for example, the big chorus chamades, the horizontal trumpets that crown the, you know, tutti in the largest French organs. But it also has, you know, the kind of roar as well that the German Romantic organs are known for. It also has many, many, many color stops in so many ways. So it, of course, is not an American orchestral organ, but it has many, many parallel sounds, including actually, I think, many parallel sounds to the Wanamaker organ, but especially to another organ that is really central to this Dupré work, and that is the Willis III organ at Westminster Cathedral in London. I think it's very interesting that Dupré chose to premiere the written version of the Passion Symphony, not in France, but in London at Westminster Cathedral. And in fact, I believe the 32-foot reed was installed just shortly, you know, before that occasion. So to me, when I think about the soundscape of the French symphonic instruments that Dupré knew in France, the wonderful Cavaillé-Coll organs, the Willis III at Westminster Cathedral, the Wanamaker organ, I had all of these sounds in my mind as I thought about the music and thought about the soundscape, the aesthetic that I really wanted to have in order to do what I wanted to do with the music. So that is what led me to the organ in Dudelange. First, it was the Dupré driving the choice of instrument. And then from there, the rest of the recording kind of fell into place. You know, already there was this theme of emerging of styles, of, you know, different kinds of organ building, different kinds of composition coming together in one piece, and a desire on my part as the artist to explore that and to see what new realms and new discoveries we might find. And so I decided to complete the recording with other works along those lines. I very much wanted to record a piece to bring up the German Romantic side of the organ in Dudelange. Again, the Willen, Introduction to Passacaglian Fugue, although it's by a British composer who immigrated to Canada, it has German Romanticism written all over it. In fact, it was inspired by Willen hearing a work by Max Reger. And I wanted to bring out the German Romantic side of that piece. And I thought that the organ in Dudelange would be perfect for that, partly because it again has the high-pressure English-style tuba, which Willen calls for in several places in the score. And then after those two major works, you know, I love working with composers. On my first recording, A Cathedral's Voice, I commissioned a young award-winning American composer, Zachary Wadsworth, to write a new piece for that recording. That recording also features the premiere recording of a set of three pieces by George Overland. So for this recording, for Influences, I also very much wanted to feature a commissioned piece, something brand new, composed just for this recording. And so I turned to Philip Moore, a renowned British composer, to write something. We knew the organ already, and also the theme of the recording. And so he took influence from the French pastorals, such as those by Franck, or Roger Ducasse, or of course, many before Franck as well, for the overall form of the piece. And then, for something light, the sort of scherzo of the recording, I did the first recording of a piece by contemporary Dutch composer Odd Vamus called Ride in a High-Speed Train, which itself has influence, for example, from Balkan music. So the repertoire came about first from the choice of instrument, and then including the theme that I have, which led to the title of the recording, Influences. And it was so much fun to put together this recording, to search for the music, to learn it, and then actually making the recording last summer there, seeing how incredibly well the organ handled the music was such a thrill.
I noticed based on your concerts and your albums, you like a variety of musical styles.
I really consider myself to be a generalist. It's really hard for me to pinpoint one particular style that I like more than the rest. And one of the wonderful things about the organ as an instrument is that we not only have such a huge variety of repertoire, but also a huge variety of instruments. For example, this fall, I have played a few times the major chorale preludes from the Klavierübung 3 of Bach on organs built in a German Baroque style, such as organs by Paul Fritz and Richard Falks and Brombau. And then coming up in the spring, I'm doing the same on an instrument by Fisk, another instrument by Richard Falks. And that's just so wonderful. And I love all the color and expressivity and life in those instruments, with the tuning, the action, the winding, all the color stops. And then I've also played recitals on more modern instruments as well, instruments that have French influence and English influence. And I've played music 19th century, 20th century, 21st century, for example. And I love being able to do all of that. I hope to be someone that is knowledgeable in all of those styles and simply doesn't take one approach to playing all music from all styles, but can do it with some kind of knowledge. I think it's very important to know the instruments that the composers knew, to know the historical context, to know the style, to know how, as much as we can, they approached the instrument. So I also really, and that, of course, that is itself, a lifelong task of always learning and always trying to discover. But I love that facet, that there's always more to learn, always new music to explore.
Another thing I noticed, too, is you like to work directly with some of today's composers.
One of my greatest joys as a musician has been the opportunities to work with composers. I think that this is absolutely of the highest importance for us as performing musicians. So much of the repertoire that we have came about because composers were given opportunities. And I think that as our world goes on and our society and culture goes on and continues to change and evolve, as it always has and always will, we really need to have at the forefront of our thoughts ways to provide opportunities for composers so that we continue the heritage and the treasure of music that we have. So for my very first recording, I commissioned, as I mentioned, a young award-winning American composer, Zachary Wadsworth. And then for my second recording, Influences, I commissioned Philip Moore. I also have commissioned choral music from other composers as well. For example, I commissioned Colin Mauby back in 2005 to write a piece for the choir at St. Anne's Church in Rochester, New York, where I was music director. we were celebrating the church's 75th anniversary. I also commissioned Zachary Wadsworth as well, and in fact, that wound up being the first commission that Zach Wadsworth received. And, you know, he has gone on to do such great things. He's won huge awards and has become really a very, very well-known composer, and I really could not be more proud of that. There is a unique thrill when you receive the piece that has been commissioned, either via email as a score or in the mail. Most recently, what I received was some choral music by Philip Moore that he wrote for my choir here at Christ Church in Greenwich, Connecticut, a set of Tenebrae responsorials that we did during Holy Week this past spring. And I got the email from him, and I just remember being so thrilled and excited, thinking, I'm about to open something that nobody else has seen except the composer, and thinking, what is this going to be like? You know, who else is going to want, you know, to do this? What new insight into these texts that have been set for hundreds of years am I about to see? It's something new and exciting and fresh.
If someone asks you why you love playing the organ, how do you answer them?
I would say I love the instrument for a number of reasons. Initially, when I was a child, it was because of the complexity of the instrument and all that goes into playing it. But there is so much more to it than that. The variety of, you know, organs from so many different periods, from the 16th century, 17th, 18th, 19th centuries, so many different countries, so many different soundscapes. We are never bored. There is always so much to explore, and also the huge variety of music and of the organ's repertoire. As a concert organist, I constantly designing concert programs, and each time I do that, I am once again reminded just of what a huge variety of music there is. And, you know, when I go to learn new repertoire, as I'm about to start doing, for example, in January, I will probably begin learning some new music to play in the summer or to play in the fall of 2017. You know, simply trying to choose, you know, among all the pieces that I would love to learn, what I actually am going to learn is again a reminder of just how much music there is. So I think it's the tremendous variety, and, you know, of repertoire and of instruments, alongside the quality of music. Look at the organ music of J.S. Bach alone. My goodness, that's among the greatest music ever composed. And so I think it is really a privilege as an organist to be the custodian of such a treasure.
I would like to thank Jonathan Ryan for being my guest on today's program. We have links to Jonathan's website and where you can purchase his music on our website, attheorgan.com. You can subscribe to At the Organ on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher to be sure you hear our latest episodes. I'm Jim Logue. Thank you for listening.
At the Organ is a production of the Organ Media Foundation. For more information about supporting the foundation or sponsoring an episode of At the Organ, go to organmedia.org. Thank you for listening.